This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I also said when there's a fire already burning, you don't add more fuel to it. And so we're here on what's supposed to be a gun violence bill, and we're just adding more guns to the mix. It doesn't make sense.
The Florida Senate okays a plan to arm teachers while rejecting an assault weapons ban.
The school board decides. If they don't want to have it, they simply don't have it.
What about that bill requiring In God We Trust displayed on school grounds?
Two separate issues, and I really take when people I hate when people politicize stuff and say, oh, you passing In God We Trust, what about guns? Well, we're dealing with that.
Representative Kimberly Daniels is here to defend her bill. With the House for and Senate against, the legislature meets a giant fork on the road to ban texting while driving.
If I decide to put a phone in my hands and start texting and driving, that's your life, that's your family's life, that's every other Floridian's life on our roadways that I'm putting at risk.
When it comes to fighting public corruption, there is one way to hold your public officials accountable, and that's by calling them out. But what if they don't like what you have to say?
Elected officials just don't like to be criticized or have their policies criticized, and they use the power of the police to intimidate people.
That's Fain Lozman, the regular Joe with the history-making achievement of having his cases argued before the U.S. Supreme Court twice.
When these elected officials abused the First Amendment, and somebody had to make a stand, and that was me.
All that and more coming up on episode 140 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. With just 1 week left in this year's legislative session, regular legislative session, the stakes are high. Survivors of the mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School have been confronting their lawmakers here in Tallahassee and have gained worldwide attention for their activism. After hours of intense debate, the Florida Senate rejected an assault weapons ban this weekend, while moving forward with a voluntary plan to arm teachers in schools. In the rare Saturday session, senators briefly approved, then swiftly rejected, an amendment to Senate Bill 7026 that would have banned the sale of AR-15 rifles, the type used in the shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Democrats like Senator Audrey Gibson of Jacksonville tried unsuccessfully to strip one of the controversial provisions to allow specially trained teachers to bring guns to schools.
I also said when there's a fire already burning, you don't add more fuel to it. And so we're here on what's supposed to be a gun violence bill, and we're just adding more guns to the mix. It doesn't make sense.
The Senate rejected nearly four dozen Democratic amendments to the bill that was introduced by conservative Republicans. The so-called school marshal program would allow school districts to work with county law enforcement to deputize trained school personnel to carry concealed weapons during school hours. Bradenton Republican Bill Galvano, who introduced the Senate's updated version of the bill, said the only thing he would have liked to change about the provision is the name, but he says the measure gives others a chance to have a say.
Because it's a voluntary program, I think I would like to at least give the sheriffs the opportunity to make some decisions in terms of what they offer and have the districts weigh in a little bit.
The Senate is expected to approve the bill Monday and send it to the House. Here is House Speaker-designate Jose Oliva.
We didn't say a single thing about the school board and who decides. The school board decides. If they don't want to have it, they simply don't have it. And that's it, regardless of how many teachers have gone through the program and are prepared to do it. And so I think it's an important distinction. We're in a highly charged environment. People are highly charged about what they think the solutions are and what works and what doesn't. But here's what we have shown, is that in the shortest period of time, we put together a piece of legislation that covers mental health, law enforcement, gun regulation, and also makes a massive fiscal commitment to really address what caused this problem. And I think that we're doing that.
House leaders hope to approve the bill in time to reach the governor's desk before the session ends on March 9th. In God We Trust, do you believe that motto should be required to be displayed in public schools? Well, a day after those students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas rallied at the Capitol only to see their wish for an assault weapons ban get voted down, the House in turn later approved House Bill 839 that calls for the posting of In God We Trust in schools. The story picked up national attention to the surprise of bill sponsor, Representative Kimberly Daniels, a Democrat of Jacksonville.
I didn't know that.
We caught up for a chat on the House floor.
The bill is all about displaying the national and the state symbol in our schools so that our children can see it and so that it can be conspicuously displayed. And I think the big question is, why do I have to do that and why is it hidden?
Why is it needed?
It's needed because our children see so much negativity. It's needed because it's a part of our history. And so if it's a part of our history, why isn't it up? Because when I was in school, I saw it. And I believe that our children need to know their history. They need to see that symbol in school because it's a part of history.
Yeah. I think what with the national attention that it's getting, it seems to have been caught up in the pipeline of where you're not seeing a lot of movement on issues like guns, but you're seeing this accelerate and go through. So folks are like, what's going on, Florida?
Well, I think that's pretty unfair. Before this happened, I put In God We Trust has nothing to do with what's not happening or happening with guns. It has to do with us dealing with one issue, two separate issues. And I really take when people politicize stuff and say, oh, you passing In God We Trust. What about guns? Well, we're dealing with that. And it's just horrible of how we had to come to where we are right now. And I think that people are politicizing comparing In God We Trust with guns, when In God We Trust is a part of that. Because no matter how many guns we get rid of, no matter what we do, how much money, people need faith and people need hope, and our young people do. Mm-hmm. And that's very important.
Yeah. One of the other things that has been brought up, what about other religions and their rights to have their sayings in schools or not being recognized when In God We Trust
we just say God. We didn't say Jesus, we didn't say Jehovah, we didn't say Allah. I just think that's just playing with it. We said God, and whoever God is to you, then trust in him. Well, and if you don't. That's the real problem. If you don't want to trust in God, keep moving. I see filth all the time that I don't want to see. We put Harry Potter books in schools. I'm not particularly, moved by Harry Potter's books that teach our children witchcraft and sorcery. That's not my favorite, but I don't say don't put Harry Potter books in school, which Harry Potter books are the roots of Wiccan magic, Wiccan witchcraft. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying it's just a good thing and it's a positive thing.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
And thank you.
Thank you.
That's Representative Kimberly Daniels of Jacksonville. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. The Florida House overwhelmingly approved a measure last week that would make texting behind the wheel a primary offense. But the measure was put in park in the Florida Senate. A top Senate Republican is blocking House Bill 33 from advancing, saying he's concerned about giving extra power to police. Senator Rob Bradley of Fleming Island says he's worried about people's privacy rights since officers would have to inspect a phone to prove someone was texting. The bill sponsor, Delray Beach Democrat Emily Slossberg, says it's about saving lives.
Let me tell Senator Bradley something. Look, you don't have the liberty to drink intoxicated. You don't have the liberty to text and drive. That is not a liberty you have, because that is dangerous behavior. It kills people.
Florida's current law classifies texting by non-commercial drivers as a secondary offense. That means officers must see another violation, like speeding or reckless driving, before they could cite a driver for texting. Slossberg says she survived a car accident as a teenager that killed her twin sister. She says more needs to be done to curb the practice of texting while driving.
If I decide to put a phone in my hands and start texting and driving, that's your life, that's your family's life, that's every other Floridian's life on our roadways that I'm putting at risk. This is legislation that will prevent more fatalities on our roadways.
Some senators have also raised concerns of possible racial profiling. Even though the House voted 112-2 to approve the bill, it likely has reached its end this session due to the Senate gridlock. Texting while driving is already a primary offense in 43 states. Coming up, a man who has been taunted and called many names. Some might say he's the Brian Pitts of Riviera Beach. Shout out to Justice to Jesus. We haven't seen much of him around this session, or at least I haven't. Well, Fane Lozman, the renegade with a mission to out corrupt politicians and stand up for First Amendment rights, is here to discuss his remarkable second visit to the U.S. Supreme Court.
In fighting political corruption, I've been successful in getting a number of elected officials arrested and removed from office. And I'm going to keep up the fight. Somebody has to do it.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. Please send your generous contributions to rotundapodcast.com. It helps us to expand our reach. This program is featured and promoted on newspaper websites, new media websites, political blogs, any and everywhere that has anything to do with Florida politics. So follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, at Rotunda Podcast. And be sure to find that donate button on our website. We welcome your generous contributions along with your tips, and we've been getting a lot of story ideas. Be an active listener, and thanks for your support. Welcome back to the program, and let's jump right in with our next guest. Many legal scholars describe him with awe at how mystical it is for an average Joe to have their cases argued before the U.S. Supreme Court not once, but twice. When you think about it, big businesses, government, and a host of other matters tend to dominate the justices' docket. Actually, the more I think about it, Fane Lozman is not your average Joe.
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, what I do for a living is I'm a developer, I'm an inventor, I'm a trader. But relative to what's been going on with my civic activities, I would have to say I'm a civic activist who fights for Florida Sunshine Law and for the First Amendment. And primarily, I fight against public corruption.
At 56 years old, the independently wealthy, Lozman found himself before the U.S. Supreme Court recently.
I mean, public speakers are routinely harassed and thrown out of meetings. It's not unique to me. Elected officials just don't like to be criticized or have their policies criticized, and they use the power of the police to intimidate people. And after I was arrested, a lot of individuals I know said, hey, I can't go up there and make my public comments because if I get arrested, it will impact my ability to get a job, rent an apartment. I can't be locked up for a couple of days. So, I mean, it has a real chilling effect when these elected officials abuse the First Amendment, and somebody had to make a stand, and that was me.
In 2006, Lozman took a stand, and he kept standing.
So I had been arrested while making public comments. I was only about 15 seconds into my comments, and I was arrested and dragged off.
Fane Lozman, the Riviera Beach Marina. As is typical, the mayor and Ms. Duncan aren't here during my comments. The mayor, he's probably aware that the U.S. Attorney's Office has arrested the second corrupt local politician. This time it was former Palm Beach County Commissioner Tony Mazzalotti.
Fane Lozman, you have a right to say what you want to say publicly, but you will not stand up and go through that kind of...
Yes, I will.
No, you
Commissioner
don't.
Ray Liberti was arrested in the spring. I'm informing the citizens that two county commissioners... I'm not finished. I have been diligent in continuing my investigation. Excuse me. I'm not walking outside. I haven't finished my comments. Huh? Why am I being
You cannot
arrested?
Get up here and insinuate that somebody up here is
quicker than I am. I was talking about County Commissioner Tony Mazzalotti. I have a right to make my public comment.
Take him out.
Look at this. I have a right to talk about... Why am I being arrested? I have a First Amendment.
If you go out, you won't be arrested.
So what made commissioners react so swiftly to Lozman?
All because I was opposing the privatization of the public marina and a plan that was going to take 2,200 homes via eminent domain to give to the same private developer.
Lozman was against the plan because it was his home, though the city of Riviera said it was just a vessel.
I was living in the marina with my floating home, and the marina had been donated by an inventor back in the, I think it was 1907. It had been donated in perpetuity for recreational purposes for the public. And the city council at the time said, well, you know, that was an old donation 100 years ago. We're just going to ignore that, and we're going to give it to a private developer, and I had a problem with that.
Things got intense.
It was much greater than just arresting me that evening. They had tried to evict my floating home from the marina. I won that trial on a First Amendment defense in a three-day trial. And then later on, they created a phony maritime lien and had my floating home arrested and towed 85 miles to Miami, where it was ultimately auctioned off. The city went to the U.S. Marshal auction, outbid the public that attended, and then destroyed my floating home at taxpayers' expense, and then repeatedly mocked me about destroying my floating home.
How did they repeatedly mock you?
Oh, they would tease me from this. Like, hey, you're out of town now. We've destroyed your floating home. But they didn't realize that I had gone and purchased a property in a place called Singer Island on the eastern edge of Riviera Beach. So I wasn't going anywhere. I purchased 25 acres of submerged lands where I could put a floating home and no one could ever touch it again.
The big outcome of the first case was the definition of vessel versus a home. Finally, some clarity in maritime law.
Yeah, the first case, they reversed. They said that the federal courts had no right to seize my floating home. But by that time, my floating home had been destroyed. And they also ruled that floating homes don't come under federal law, they come under state law. So I really never got the remedy of really anything. And if I wanted to get a proper remedy, I'd have to go through a state court process on a conversion claim. So it was more what I call it. It was a Pyrrhic victory where I stopped this horror show of having your floating home arrested in a federal admiralty action for the other 10,000 floating home owners around the country. But so far, it really hasn't done anything for me, except I had a $195,000 legal bill.
And how are you taking care of that legal bill?
No, I mean, I can afford to fight these battles because I have the means to do so. But I'm just saying I would have hoped that when I had won case number one, that there would have been a fee shifting where the city would have had to pay my legal fees, but it didn't work out that way.
Lozman found a sympathetic audience in some of the justices, as Chief Justice John Roberts said, quote, "I found the video pretty chilling. I mean, the fellow is up there for about 15 seconds, and the next thing he knows, he's being let off in handcuffs, speaking in a very calm voice the whole time. Now, the council may not have liked what he was talking about, but that doesn't mean they get to cuff him and lead him out," end quote. Several other justices weren't as warm to Lozman's case, expressing concern that it might lead them to create a standard that would subject many communities to similar lawsuits. Justice Anthony Kennedy told Lozman's lawyer, quote, "I'm very concerned about police officers in difficult situations. In this case, there's a very serious contention that people in elected office deliberately wanted to intimidate this person. And it seems to me that maybe in this case we should cordon off or box off what happened here from the ordinary conduct of police officers," end quote.
That all you have to do is look at the video of the arrest and read the transcript of the closed-door session where they agreed to intimidate me. And you would come to the conclusion that this should not be going on in America, that this is, you know, a blatant violation of the First Amendment.
So what happens now? It's not sure. We'll just have to wait and see what the justices rule.
This case is a much bigger deal because we've talked about it, relative to public meetings, but you also have the whole a specter of reporters. When reporters and photojournalists go cover protest rallies, they're being arrested for minor offenses just so they will stop their First Amendment activities of covering protests. Going back to talking public meetings, we saw what happened to the school teacher back in January where she was talking and the guy running the meeting didn't like it and she was arrested.
Stop resisting.
I am not. Stop resisting. Just push me to the floor. Sir, hold on. I am way smaller than you.
So if I do not win this case, we're going to slide further into a police state where the police can come up with any kind of bogus charge. In my case, they came up, you know, 8 years after the arrest during trial, they came up with this bogus charge just to go forward with stopping you from exercising your First Amendment rights, stopping you from speaking at a public meeting, stopping you from carrying a protest sign, stop you from photographing police activities during protest rallies.
But in the meantime, Lozman is carrying his badge of honor, wearing it proudly and enjoying his fame.
He's on the cover of the Washington Post, my case. So, I mean, the story's out there. And, you know, one of the other things, I got to give a shout out to Barbara Peterson and the First Amendment Foundation. She made me a member of the First Amendment Foundation Sunshine Brigade years ago. And, I've taken that responsibility seriously. And I've been fighting to uphold the Sunshine Law. I've had a couple legal actions to do so. For example, the city of Riviera Beach refused to keep written minutes of its meetings. And I challenged that. And we got a court victory where they had to keep written minutes. So, I'm proud that the First Amendment Foundation gave me their Pete Whitesell Award in January. And, like Barbara, I have a passion for upholding the First Amendment, upholding the Sunshine Law, and fighting political corruption. I've been successful in getting a number of elected officials arrested and removed from office. And I'm going to keep up the fight. Somebody has to do it.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.